Let's see, Nancy, what's my 10 o'clock appointment all about?
It's a vote in the Appropriations Committee on whether to fund a new bill to clean up air pollution, Senator.
Ah, we spend enough money on the dang environment. That's all we talk about. And anyway, the chemical industry is the lifeblood of our fair state, not to mention a generous contributor to my campaign chest. What's next?
Sir, the Washington Post made note of your critical remarks about the environment after the last committee meeting.
Mm-hmm. What's next?
At noon, there's a luncheon with the National Governors Association where they'll unveil this year's agenda.
Nope, can't go. I've got a luncheon speech to Imperial Oil. They're paying me $15,000, and it'll be on a yacht. Can't miss that one.
Sir, Imperial Oil has just been indicted on a stock fraud charge. It might not look too good.
Oh, yeah, and please send a box of cigars, good Cuban ones, to that new Surgeon General for me.
But, sir, the Surgeon General's taken a strong stand against tobacco, and there's still an embargo on products from Cuba. And besides, she probably doesn't smoke cigars.
And with those cigars, let her know I strongly support vaccinations for children of all kinds. Bye, Miss Logan.
Would you say that the senator was actively listening to his assistant, or anyone for that matter? The skit was meant to be funny, of course, but there's a point to it. You probably noticed that there was a huge listening barrier present in the conversation. It's not from the environment, not from Nancy, and not from her message. It's inside the senator. The barrier inside his mind against listening to anything except what he wants to hear. Let's now consider those barriers that are internal to the listener, and there's two types. The first type of internal barrier is physical, and it's caused by any number of circumstances. You're tired, it's close to lunchtime, you've got a headache, you're feeling time constraints, you have to pick up your kid at baseball practice or from a dance lesson. Maybe the person's sitting too close to you or too far away, and that's making you uncomfortable and you're finding it hard to concentrate. That last example is an issue of proxemics, that is, the amount of physical space between you and the speaker. Be aware that what seems like a comfortable distance between the two of you for you can be very uncomfortable for someone else. Avoid violating another person's personal space. Some people like to be physically close to a person that they're speaking to, while others want to keep a greater distance away. I have an Italian friend who likes to be in my face, very close to me when he talks. He feels he gets more of my attention that way, and I'm fine with that. But I'm also aware that some people from other cultures, notably German, English, and Japanese, prefer to stand a ways away, approximately an arm's length away. Certainly not everyone from those cultures has the same preference, but there's a comfort zone for each person that's easy to discover if you shift around a little bit. If you move forward slightly and the other person moves back slightly, that tells you something. It means you're pushing on their comfort zone and they're adjusting to maintain a satisfactory distance. The second type of internal barrier is psychological. This has to do with what your mind does as you listen. You daydream, you're bored, or there's a little voice inside you that keeps discounting what you're hearing. Probably the most persistent psychological barrier is the tendency to let your mind wander away from the speaker. She may say something that triggers an image, that triggers a past experience, that triggers a warm glow or sadness or anger, and bingo, your mind is off and running in another direction. Maybe your past experiences don't jibe with what this person is telling you, or the discussion isn't heading in the direction you hoped it would, like our senator friend at the beginning who didn't want to hear anything that contradicted what he was thinking. Another psychological barrier that's implied in our skit with the senator and his assistant has to do with his attitude toward her and her status in his eyes. Let's listen to another scenario at a place that we'll call the General Vacuum Corporation, and I think you'll get the point.
Randy, I have an idea for the company, you know, to do with needing new products and so on.
What is it?
Well, I really kind of got this idea in that first staff meeting we had when Bill was talking about, well, you know, the need for a new breakthrough.
Come on, I've got a lot of work to do here, Jill.
Okay, well, I think we really should consider a solar-powered vacuum. No, I mean, seriously. This solar energy is really the in thing now. Why, I think it'd be a really hot seller. And I've been reading about some of the solar technology and all. You know, I really think we could do it.
Well, it certainly is an idea, but in my opinion, the technology for that sort of thing is still light years away. But keep up the good work, Jill. I'm glad to see that you're reading something besides fashion magazines. I need that letter to go out today, please.
1 week later, Bill, who's the General Vacuum president, knocks on Randy's office door.
Hi, Randy. I came by to talk to Henry, but he's out for the afternoon. Have you got a minute?
Sure. What can I do for you?
I want to test out an idea on you, since you're in touch with our people in the field. To put it in a nutshell, I've just been over to R&D, and they've come up with an idea for a solar-powered vacuum. How does that strike you?
Well, I don't know. Tell me more.
Well, they've been fooling around with solar technology over there for the last few years. Of course, it's been very hush-hush. Now, mind you, I don't want word of this to get out of the company.
Well, you can count on me.
Good. The upshot of it is they think they've got a breakthrough in what would be a solar battery which would have enough power to run a slightly modified variation of our home model vacuum cleaner. What do you think? Would it go out there?
Well...
Basically, my background's in sales, like you. I don't know about these microchips and integrated circuits and so on. But anyway, the point is that with this battery, you wouldn't have to have a cord on the vacuum cleaner anymore. Basically, there would be a solar collector and transducer stuck up on the roof, and that would charge our unit. Think of it, a cord-free vacuum cleaner. I can see it now in the industrial journals. General cuts the umbilical cord, or vacuum cleaning reborn at General. Well, we can get to all that later, but I really think we have a handle on a sensational promotional program that's going to do a turnaround for this company. So, what do you say?
Well, what do you think Randy's response to his boss was? The same response he gave to Jill? That the technology for a solar-powered vacuum was light years away? What if Jill was the only person who had approached Randy and her idea simply went by the wayside and a competitor came out with the solar product first? Let's take a minute to analyze what happened in the initial conversation. Jill was clearly a subordinate to Randy, and he didn't give any indication that her ideas were important to him. Jill kind of, sort of, you know, like, stumbled around in her presentation. Speaking clearly is definitely a problem for Jill, but it shouldn't have disqualified her in Randy's eyes. Listening to someone like Jill present an idea takes more effort and concentration than it does to listen to someone like Bill. In addition, Randy dismissed Jill's idea because of its source. It came from a magazine, and since he assumed that Jill reads mainly lightweight magazines, it didn't hold his attention. The moral of the story is that you lose out on important pieces of information if you turn off your concentration simply because of how someone speaks or what you perceive their status to be. It was clear that Randy paid more attention and made more of an effort at concentration when he was talking with the president of the company than with his secretary. That might make sense at some level. You probably have more opportunity to consult with your secretary than with the company president. But my point is that an active listener knows how to eliminate that psychological barrier involving their attitude toward the status of the speaker. I heard another story recently involving attitude toward the speaker, only this time the effect was reversed. A woman named Kathy had a son who worked on Bill Clinton's presidential campaign. The son was able to get his mother invited to a private gathering with President Clinton. As Kathy described it, she was in a large circle of people and Clinton was coming around to each person to say hello and have a brief chat. Kathy's a psychotherapist, and she decided she'd use the opportunity to put in a plug for mental health care being a part of the overall health care reform package. When Bill Clinton got to her, she was able to say what she wanted to say, and to her surprise, the president engaged her in a 5-minute conversation about what his reservations were on the subject. Kathy said later that she was so flustered that she didn't remember a thing he said. She had to ask people around her what the president had said to her. Here was a case of where the high status of the speaker had created a major listening barrier. Kathy's story may be a bit unusual, but it's not hard to imagine that your ability to listen actively to a very important conversation might be compromised if you're overawed by the speaker. One simple way to deal with all the barriers we've discussed, environmental, speaker-related, content-related, and listener-related, is to consider them as either within our control or not within our control. Some of the barriers, such as a noisy or uncomfortable environment, can at least be minimized, if not controlled. You always want to create as comfortable an environment as possible, especially in terms of temperature and seating. That also means minimizing the competing sounds and the visual distractions. When you're meeting with someone in their environment and there are a lot of distractions, you could recommend moving into another room with more privacy. More than likely, a person won't take offense if you point out a distraction that they're not aware of when it's clearly in the service of your being able to hear them better. The timing of the conversation has to be appropriate, too. For example, what's the best time to have a talk with a 10-year-old child? Right after school? No. During primetime TV? No. Not even if you demand their attention. How about right at bedtime? Aha! Any 10-year-old would be happy to have a conversation that extended the time before bed. Choosing the right time with adults is a little trickier, but in general, seek out the times when they're most receptive to a conversation. You probably don't have much control over distractions that come from the speaker, but you can do something about your perception of those distractions. And the things you can do are similar to what you need to do to take care of distractions that are content-related and that are internal to you. Let me give you four specific techniques that will help you concentrate and focus on the message whenever you encounter any of the listening barriers. The first concentration technique is to breathe in deeply. Yes, breathe deeply. It's as simple as that. Try it now. Breathe in, hold it, slowly breathe out, relax. There's a lot of benefits to that simple act, but the main one I want to emphasize now is that you can't talk when you're breathing in. It prevents you from interrupting or arguing with the speaker. And a deep breath helps you focus on the present moment when you catch yourself drifting off and to refocus on the person speaking. The second concentration technique is to decide to listen. That is, to make a conscious decision to listen to the other person. The philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson once wrote, "Everyone in some way is my superior in that I can learn something from them." He didn't mean only people he found interesting or likable. His words hold for people you strongly disagree with or dislike as well. The comedian Will Rogers is quoted as saying, "I never met a person I didn't like." Now, do you think he ever ran into someone who rubbed him the wrong way? Of course. But his point was that he could find one thing he did like about the person. Maybe one nugget, one gem of insight, one interesting fact. And you can too. The person may be boring or may be saying things that you feel are completely irrelevant to your life. But according to Will Rogers' philosophy, there's probably one thing you could learn from this person. And therefore, you have to concentrate throughout the conversation because you never know when that one thing is going to show up. The decision to listen is within your power. You just need to commit to it. When a distraction occurs, you can think, "I am listening to this person only." Now, most of us realize that when we're driving a car, a momentary distraction can lead to injury or even death. That's a compelling reason to concentrate. There usually isn't such a compelling reason when we're listening to somebody talk. But the driving example tells us we can concentrate when we decide to, for hours at a time, even when we're tired or uncomfortable. A third technique for maintaining concentration allows you to capitalize on that speed differential I mentioned earlier. You can hear much faster than a person can speak. This technique is the art of mental paraphrase. That means you restate, translate, say in different words what the speaker is saying, only you keep it to yourself. Doing mental paraphrasing will keep you from daydreaming or shifting your mind to other topics. You'll keep your focus on the words of the other person and not on your own thoughts. A bit later, when we deal with the A of the caress model, acknowledging, I'll give you some very specific directions on how to use vocal paraphrasing as a way to check your understanding of what's being said and as a way to show you're listening. We'll also practice something akin to paraphrasing when we focus on the researching dynamic of active listening. For now, Let me give you a couple of quick exercises to practice the art of mental paraphrasing. It's a skill that you may not have learned in a formal way, so practicing it several times throughout the program will give you a good foundation for practicing it in real life. Put simply, a paraphrase is a statement that reflects the essence of what the speaker has just said. A good paraphrase is brief, captures the important ideas, leaves out details, and conveys the same meaning with different words. This means that your paraphrase is shorter than what the person said, and it helps clarify things for you. Later on, when we use paraphrasing as a technique for acknowledging and researching, your paraphrase will have to be acceptable to the speaker as accurately reflecting what he or she said. But for the following exercise, we'll concentrate on simply doing a paraphrase for ourselves, not for the speaker. You're going to hear a couple of brief stories. After each one, I'll give you time to come up with a good paraphrase of what was said. Remember that what you're trying to do is come up with a short statement that captures the essential content. Here's the first one.
My friend Rick was on a flight to Chicago, and sitting next to him in first class was a Japanese businessman. After they took off, the businessman turned to Rick and asked politely, "What do you do for a living?" Well, Rick told him, "I'm a professional speaker." The man said, "Oh, that's very interesting. I don't know anything about professional speaking. Tell me about it." Well, for the next hour and a half, Rick spilled his guts to this man. He told him everything he knew. All his trade secrets, marketing strategy secrets, you name it. At the end of his lecture, Rick slumped back into his seat. He was exhausted. The plane was about to land, and he realized he didn't know a thing about this man. The businessman knew a great deal about Rick's professional life and a few things about his personal life, too. Well, it turned out the man was attending an electronics show in Chicago and was going to lecture on development and marketing. Rick had just spent an hour and a half telling the man things he probably already knew, and probably some very useful information he didn't know.
How would you paraphrase that story to yourself in a couple of sentences? What was the point or the moral of the story? Think about it for a few seconds. Okay, let me give you my paraphrase of that story. A professional speaker told all he knew about professional speaking to a fellow passenger on a plane ride. The moral is, when I talk, I only know what I know. But when I listen, I not only know what I know, but I also know what you know. Let's try another story.
Ed Garfield was a sales engineer and technical consultant for the Kester Solder Company. In the 1950s, he was called in to consult with a men's cosmetics company about developing a pressurized can for shaving cream. The solder would be used to hold the inside flange to the can. Ed worked with the company, the product came out, and was shipped all over the country. A few weeks later, Kester Solder got a very irate call from the shaving cream client. The cans were erupting on the shelves of stores and in the warehouse. Shaving cream was everywhere. The solder wasn't holding. Calmly, Ed went to the client, where he was almost physically attacked by the distraught executives. Instead of defending his work, Ed asked to see the blueprints for the product. They hadn't followed his advice on design, and had used a soft solder instead of the one he had recommended. The design team argued with him, and Ed didn't argue back. He listened and then left. A week later, the client called him and asked him to come back and work with the design team. They made the appropriate changes, and the shaving cream product and Kester's reputation were salvaged.
Can you paraphrase that story in two sentences and then come up with what you learned from it? I'll give you a few seconds to think. Okay, here's my paraphrase. A sales engineer is put under tremendous pressure because a client thinks his design advice caused a major product failure. He calmly points out where the problem originated and offers his solution, which eventually wins out. The moral is, when you're under pressure, don't explode. It'll just make a mess. state your case, and detach yourself from the results. How about one more practice exercise on mental paraphrasing? This one's going to require you to summarize a point of view that may push some buttons for you.
Beginning in the early 1980s, U.S. corporations were under constant pressure to withdraw their operations from South Africa. The purpose was to create economic sanctions against that country for its policy of racial segregation known as apartheid. Between 1980 and 1985, 30 U.S. corporations withdrew from South Africa, and they were followed by 7 states and 28 U.S. cities, which refused to do business or hold stock in companies that persisted in supporting the white supremacist regime. By 1991, the list of those withdrawing or divesting themselves of any South African support had risen to 206 American companies, 28 states, and 92 cities. This campaign had the effect of exerting tremendous economic leverage on South Africa's domestic economy. The white minority government in South Africa was forced to the negotiating table to discuss sharing power with the non-white majority, and that process is fully underway today.
Okay, take a few seconds to think about that story and come up with a brief paraphrase in your mind. Here's my paraphrase. There was growing sentiment throughout the U.S. in the 1980s to put pressure on South Africa to end apartheid. The momentum created through U.S. corporate and governmental withdrawal led the South African government to initiate the process of ending their racial policies. How did you do? Did you find it easy to do the mental paraphrasing, or was it difficult for you? You can see how much this skill requires concentration on each and every idea in the story. This exercise gave you practice in paraphrasing something you heard in a way similar to summarizing. There are actually several different kinds of paraphrasing, all of which are crucial to being an excellent, active listener. When we encounter paraphrasing later in this program, we'll work on variations such as acknowledging feelings, giving feedback, and clarifying. We've talked about breathing in deeply, deciding to listen, and mentally paraphrasing. So now it's time for the fourth concentration technique, maintaining eye contact. It's called the hitchhiking theory. Your eyes follow your ears. You're most likely to listen to what you're looking at. If you're looking at the face of the speaker, watching for facial expressions, seeing if the speaker is maintaining eye contact with you or looking away, this will all help your concentration. Maintaining eye contact is a good technique, but be careful not to stare too long into the other person's eyes. Looking directly into their eyes for too long sends a message that you want to either intimidate them or be intimate with them. Neither of those messages is helpful while you're trying to be an active listener. In the last segment on this cassette side, we've given you some challenges to sharpen your ability to concentrate. That was a lot of material on the first letter of CARESS, C, for concentration. How about a quick review? We'll do it in the form of questions. First, in order to concentrate at all, you have to be able to what? Hear the speaker. There are 4 levels or types of listeners. How many can you remember? There's the non-listener who makes no effort to concentrate and tends to interrupt. Then there's the marginal listener who only listens on the surface to key phrases and is easily distracted. The evaluative listener tries to hear everything that's being said, but stays emotionally detached from the conversation. The 4th type is, yes, the active listener. The one who concentrates on the words and feelings of the other person to absorb as much as possible. What about barriers to listening? We discussed 4 general areas. The first one's easy. It makes it hard to listen if there are distractions in the environment. The second kind of barrier to listening also comes from outside yourself. That is, it's external. And it comes from your perception of the speaker. These include the way she's dressed, his grooming, and any disturbing mannerism such as her nervous twitch or his jingling change. The speaker could also distract you with certain facial expressions or body language, and their accent or speaking style or rate of delivery can also get you off track from concentrating on the message. The third area of listening barriers relate to the content, and we'll spend more time on that when we get to the E of the caress model, emotional control. And the fourth type of barrier is internal to you. We divided this area into two internal groups. What are they? Physical and psychological. Think of two internal physical barriers. How about being hungry or thirsty? Or having a distracting pain like a headache or an upset stomach? How about feeling tired? That's a definite barrier to concentration. And feeling pressure to rush for some reason, a time constraint, that'll distract you for sure. Now let's consider the internal psychological barriers. Can you remember two? How about that inner voice that pops up and comments on what the speaker is saying? How about your attitude toward the speaker, whether you consider that person beneath you or above you in status? All of those barriers, whether they're external or internal, fall into two categories relative to what you can do about them. Some of them you can control, and some of them you can't. What about the ones that feel somewhat under your control, such as your perception of the speaker or your psychological state? I offered you four simple techniques to come to grips with those barriers, and they'll come up again later with other aspects of the caress model. The first of the four techniques to help you focus your concentration on the speaker is... That's right, breathing. Taking a deep breath in and letting it out slowly. It's so simple and yet so powerful. Breathing deeply relaxes you, focuses your attention, lets you control your emotional reactions, and feels good all at the same time. The next technique for concentration is deciding to concentrate. This act of will is necessary if you want to hold your attention on the speaker. The third technique has to do with the speaker's message. Do you remember it? It was to mentally paraphrase what the speaker is saying, not out loud, at least not as far as concentration is concerned. Mentally rephrasing and reviewing what the other person is saying will help keep you from daydreaming or thinking about irrelevant topics. It'll also quiet that little commentator in the back of your head. And finally, the fourth technique has to do with your eyes. It was to maintain eye contact with the other person. We call it the hitchhiker's theory, where your eyes focus, your ears will follow. You're most likely to listen to what you're looking at. I've just presented a lot of basic material on concentration, the C in the caress model. In the next segment of the program, we'll move on to A, acknowledge, and you'll build on the ideas you've learned so far.